This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Next, we'll hear about the findings of Dr. Alan Sager, who proves that the race of the population that lives around a hospital is the greatest factor in hospital closings nationwide. One of the most surprising facts that came out of the 2000 U.S. Census was that New York City was one of the most segregated cities in the country. New York is also one of the most racially and ethnically diverse cities, but people tend to live near people that they perceive as more like them. So pockets are created, and each neighborhood has its distinct flavor. Nothing wrong with that, one would think. But in the case of Alan Sager's findings about the correlation between the closings of much-needed local hospitals and black neighborhoods throughout the United States, segregation proves to be a disaster. Eleanor Ostrinsky interviewed Alan Sager during the Color Lines conference at Harvard University.
Everyone who's a Brooklyn Dodger fan knows that things don't last. And it turns out that hospitals close from the very same neighborhoods that Major League Baseball teams relocate from. And what I did was to look at all the hospitals in 51 cities, about 1,200 hospitals, over the years from 1936 through 2003. Decade after decade, even after you control for everything else, the race of the people who live around a hospital predicts which hospitals are more likely to close and which hospitals are likely to stay open. On the other hand, things that you would reasonably expect would predict closings, like, is the hospital efficient, have no bearing on survival. But race is a factor decade after decade.
When you say race, you mean the race of the population that lives around the hospital.
That's right. The United States Census divides the whole country up into census tracts. And we looked at the census tract containing the hospital and all the adjacent ones. And we looked at the Latino share of that population, the African-American share, and also the average income. Latino population mix does not predict hospital closing. Income does not predict hospital closing. Race does.
Why would there be such a strong correlation?
One reason has to do with the lack of physicians in private practice in African-American neighborhoods. If you take a neighborhood that's white and gradually the population changes to African-American, doctors in private practice in the white community very seldom think of themselves as serving a place. They serve patients. So if the patients move to the suburbs, the doctors tend to relocate their practices or to retire. As a result, the new black residents of the community, great majority have health insurance. They may want to seek hospital care at a hospital in the neighborhood, but there are no doctors to admit patients or to care for them. So the patients want care, the hospital wants to give care, but there's no way of linking the hospital with the patients if there aren't enough doctors. And that's one of the forces that probably leads a lot of hospitals to close. Another thing is that hospitals in African-American neighborhoods, like the old Brooklyn Dodgers, were located in densely built-up neighborhoods where there wasn't maybe enough parking. So it became harder for hospitals to expand or to have parking for patients or for employees as more and more of us rely on cars. By contrast, a large teaching hospital, like a large city, almost makes its own climate. It can buy up land. It can attract patients from a long distance, more well-insured patients who are seeking the hospital's specialty care. Some people would say, well, if hospitals close in black neighborhoods, at least African-American patients are integrated into the large surviving teaching hospitals. And so we know that separate tends to mean unequal. Integrated care, shouldn't that be more equal? Well, it's a difficult question. In many cities, all the hospitals in large expanses of black neighborhoods have closed. That means greater travel time to get to the doctor, to get to a hospital. And that can deter patients from seeking care. At the same time, the large teaching hospitals are more expensive, which makes it harder for patients or their insurance companies or for public programs to afford hospital care, especially for lower-income urban residents. As well, patients with routine problems are not of the highest interest at a teaching hospital. People there are thinking about Nobel Prizes, conquering esoteric diseases, pushing back the frontiers of medical knowledge. So it may be that urban patients with routine problems don't get the best care that teaching hospitals can offer. By contrast, a 150-bed neighborhood community hospital may be just the right place to provide low-cost, high-quality care with tender, loving care from nurses and the other things that help patients recuperate from routine illnesses that we all get from time to time. the compound fracture of the leg, the surgery that requires a couple days in the hospital, the pneumonia, the gallbladder, and routine childbirth can be handled very well by a smaller mid-sized community hospital.
So what happens when one of these small community hospitals closes down? What happens to the patients around?
When a hospital closes, you lose the emergency room, you lose the outpatient clinics, and you lose the inpatient care. Most of us are pretty conservative, and if we and our families are used to going to a certain hospital, when that place closes, it takes a while to re-engage and make contact with other health care. By some estimates, up to a third of the patients who are displaced by a hospital closing stop seeking health care. So you often end up with less care for fewer people at greater cost at the surviving, farther away, more expensive teaching hospitals. You can really see this when you look at a map of city after city: St. Louis, Washington, D.C., Detroit, Cleveland, parts of New York City, parts of Philadelphia, parts of Los Angeles. If you look back, you see that in huge expanses, particularly of African-American neighborhoods, most or all of the hospitals are gone. That's one of the reasons we can't trust the free market, because there isn't one. In state after state and city after city, someone in government has to start looking at the map and saying, let's figure that every surviving hospital is needed unless proven otherwise. And we know, for example, that African-Americans rely twice as heavily on hospitals as whites do, even for basic doctor services.
And that's because just general lack of health care in their communities, so they come to the hospital first.
Most of us prefer a doctor we can see in the office with whom we can establish a good long-term relationship of trust and confidence. African Americans are disproportionately likely not to have such a doctor nearby and are forced to turn to the hospital emergency room or the hospital outpatient clinic. Now, that's partly because African Americans are less likely to have health insurance, and it's partly because fewer physicians are available in nearby communities. And the hospital is often the only medical game in town.
What could be remedied to change the situation?
There's very little brain activity in the world of people who should be thinking about hospital care. There's a belief that the free market somehow will magically solve this problem. Free market tore down the Berlin Wall. The free market will give us the health care we need. The tragedy is, and I speak as someone who happens to like the free market a lot, we don't have one in healthcare. That means government has to be involved if we're to stabilize needed hospitals or tackle other problems like winning affordable prescription drug coverage. But if people in government are paralyzed because they believe or want to believe that the free market somehow would magically do the job for them, they are irresponsibly abdicating any interest in protecting hospitals. Now, in the real world, without a free market and without government, we have only one thing, and that's called anarchy. And we are, in many cities, gradually descending into healthcare anarchy, where throughout large expanses of the city, every single hospital has closed. So what has to happen? First, we've closed so many hospitals that we have to assume that every surviving hospital is needed unless proven otherwise. So the burden of proof has to be on anyone who wants to close a hospital. Second, government has to get back into the ballgame. Government has to look at the map and say, where are the hospitals? Where are the patients who need care? And in areas where hospitals are obviously needed, government has to act in a positive way to stabilize every needed hospital. How to do that? First, a receivership law, a new law passed by state legislatures that would allow public health commissioners, attorney generals, to petition a court to put a hospital in receivership and stabilize it and protect it. And that formal or legal receivership provision should be backed by dollars in an emergency reserve fund to stabilize hospitals and also to pay for technical assistance. The other key thing is to build an early warning system so that government knows which hospitals are vulnerable, not a month before they close or a year before they close, because that's often too late, but 5 or 10 years before they close. And that's actually a realistic job that can be done. Another thing, make sure doctors are available near where patients live, near the hospitals that are competent to provide low-cost, high-quality care. One last thing would be to guarantee that every needed hospital has enough money to provide high-quality care as long as it's operated efficiently. Only government can do that job because the market has dismally failed, as all the evidence from work I've done has shown. There's no market. Government has to act because patients cannot survive medical anarchy.
You said earlier that healthcare is a dinosaur.
Tiny little brain, huge spinal cord, dinosaur stomping around the landscape, excreting money. without really paying enough attention to what care works, to who needs it, and to making sure that every patient has a good doctor, a good hospital nearby, prescription drugs, and all of these things affordable. How many folks listening today know that healthcare spending in the United States is 4 times defense spending? 1970, education spending and health spending were equal. Today, health is double education. We have enough money to take care of everyone in this country. Healthcare needs to grow and evolve out of the era of the dinosaur. How do we do that? Learn more about what works. Make sure that patients don't get unnecessary surgery. Hold doctors accountable and empower doctors to spend money carefully in ways we can trust. In the past, we tried bribing doctors with more money if they gave more care, fee for service. Then we tried bribing doctors to earn more money if they gave less care, capitation, managed care. Neither one works. Doctors have to be financially neutral, meaning they don't make more money or less money depending on how much care a patient gets. Doctors could be on salary or some other arrangement that carves up dollars for doctors in proportion to their competence, their kindness, and their energy. Fair compensation. The thing every person in the world wants. You work harder, you know what you're doing, you're kinder, you get more money. When you're spending $1.7 trillion on healthcare for 300 million Americans, that's almost $6,000 per person. It's enough to do the job. The guts of healthcare, the hospital, doctor, prescription, drug world, is affordable. We can take care of every American. We don't have to torture ourselves here.
Thank you very much for coming, Dr. Sager.
You're very welcome. Good to speak with you.
Everyone agrees that all are created equal, but do you choose to live in a mixed neighborhood? Would you hire a lawyer that looks different from you? What do you do to make others feel welcome? Give us your opinion. Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Martin Carnoway and Alan Sager are just some of the voices of our world. Voices of Our World is a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. Our producers are Eleanor Ostrinsky and Kathy Golden, and our executive producer is Larry Rich. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Whitewashing Race, The Myth of a Colorblind Society by Martin Carnoway is a University of California Press publication, available at bookstores or on the University of California Press website, www.ucpress.edu. To find out more about Dr. Alan Sager's research, go to Boston University's School of Public Health website at www.healthreformprogram.org. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll or try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.